Good morning. My name is Diane Tracy Marandola, and it's my privilege to be both the moderator and first speaker this morning. Public Health Without Borders was just a terrific lead into this concept of Nurses Without Walls. And this morning I'm going to be sharing the discussion with Doris Brown, who is the Executive Director of the Office of Public Health in the Center for Community Preparedness from Louisiana in Baton Rouge. Doris has her master's in nursing from the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, and she's a Robert Wood Johnson Executive Fellow, and also has her master's in counseling. So it's a privilege for me this morning to be sharing this platform with Doris. As we think about public health and Nurses Without Walls, the framework that we'll speak about this morning is about what nursing brings to the planning and preparedness table. Yes? Oh, sure. So we're here to speak about what nursing brings to the planning, but also to the response and rebuilding after emergencies are experienced. We'll look at the theoretical framework that empowers us to be effective in all of these different roles. There are 10 essential services that public health is built around. And I think about this from a state level, a local level in our smaller communities, and on a national perspective. Public health is here to monitor health status, investigate and diagnose health problems, inform, educate, and empower the community, mobilize and enhance community partnerships, develop policies and plans, enforce laws and regulation, link people to services, assure a prepared workforce, evaluate programs, identify solutions to various problems that we might identify. Public health emergency response planning really came into its own after 9/11. And that was the time when public health was asked to join the response table with fire and police. But we had a whole new level of lingo that we needed to learn in order to be equal partners at that table. And there are some individuals who say we had to build a new table for public health to join that group. And depending on the different levels of experience that any individual comes to that table with, really informs how the role of that individual might enhance the effectiveness of a given team. So we look at public health emergency response and planning with different scenarios that are on our mind. I remember back to the days when we were looking at smallpox vaccination of our country as we planned on going to war with Iraq. What was the model of distributing that vaccine going to look like? And a whole lot of other issues. We looked at bioterrorism kind of issues around so many different scenarios. Katrina Rita taught us quite a bit as to what the public health response needed to be there. And at this time, let us give pause to all of the planning that's going on with pandemic flu. And that there are plenty of people who say not quite enough. about 9 months after 9/11 hit, I had an opportunity to go to the Connecticut affiliate's presentation for public health nurses. And the guest speaker was a Dr. Kay Bender out of the University of Mississippi. And Kay had one question that has changed my career. Her question was that 9/11 and a lot of funding at that time was a great opportunity for nursing because there were many new positions that were being defined by that funding, but they didn't necessarily have nurse stamped on them. And I remember thinking, because I was quite well employed at the time, didn't have room for another thing on my plate, if that opportunity was in front of me, would I recognize it if it didn't have nurse stamped on it? I see a few people shaking their head, and well, in the local community that I lived in, I was a school nursing supervisor in a community that didn't have a hospital. So I watched the health department try to identify potential vaccine givers. And so the school nurses, we were quite a large district, we were a bunch of ready and able to go kind of bodies. So there was that quick link that was occurring. And in that process, we learned about four phases of a public health emergency response plan. The preparation, which included training, the response under what's called an incident command system, and nurses from their hierarchy of often understanding the setup of hospital administration know how to take orders from the top and also communicate at where the rubber meets the road to make sure that needs at the patient level get communicated back. An incident command, which emerged as a result of all the firefighting that was going out in California a number of years ago, nurses were especially adept at being able to implement and work in that incident command structure. More than one nurse has found their way to the role of incident commander because we've got that ability to bring together a lot of resources and administer. Public health emergency response is all about forging partnerships, whether it's in the United States or globally. It's all about garnering the support of others. But again, you can see that this, you can envision how this could be public health, fire, and police. And the need for egos to all come together to lay a foundation of collegiality and who's in charge. And depending on which one of those emergencies is in front of us really tells us who's going to take the lead. I have a friend, and I called it the Hartman model. It didn't show up on my slide, but I see it as a bullseye. Of the many different kind of responders that are out there, the volunteers, paid fire and police, the EMS, the hospital, all working at different levels of being able to respond to an emergency, and the patients that are affected by that emergency, the community. So it's great opportunity to practice collaborative skill building. So I'd like to hone in for a few minutes on the nurse's role in the planning process. Standards of public health nursing practice are defined by the American Nurses Association and the Public Health Nursing Practice Division. Our process is systematic, looking at a community's strengths and needs, the current body of scientific knowledge. So its forever changing available resources. And at the start of an emergency, you have fewer people working a maximum load, and then it builds out as more and more paid and volunteer members show up on the scene. But available resources and the logistics of that is complicated, to say the least. Accepted criteria and standards of practice. The purpose of the agency that we're a part of, and understanding the community that we serve. As public health nurses assess populations, and I remember I've worked with plenty of nurses as we look at the continuum of taking the community health nurse who's working one-on-one with the patient, the home care nurse. They're just waiting to experience the roots of home health care back to the community. If we just say that, think about a year-long process of moving on your one-on-one care of the patient to understanding your community as a whole. We look at defining our outcomes. We want to continually assure quality. We want to evaluate the health status of our communities, of the programs and services we put in place. So this all translates over into the nurse's role in planning and response. But they're sort of the underpinnings of what we bring to those issues. There's some of the more administrative side of making sure that a nurse who has sets their sights on excellence have an opportunity for performance appraisal based on competencies, education, and the ability to be collegial, collaborate, and participate in resource utilization and research. Sort of that application of research component. I think these core competencies look familiar to all of us. It's that we look at them in relation to emergency response, being able to describe the chain of command. Does everyone here know where their local emergency response plan is? Is there anybody that doesn't? If not, I suggest that when you return to your home base that you might want to help somebody dust it off. Do you know your role and function in an emergency? Nurses are some of the most trusted members of a community. Your next door neighbor in a public health emergency or disaster is going to look to you for advice. So whether you have an opportunity to focus on planning in your community, do know that you are going to be a resource one way or another, and so are the other nurses in your community. Some of the communication equipment can get a little testy in an emergency, so do you know how to use it? Or be prepared to be flexible when you're learning how. Be clear on the limit to your skill set and assess, communicate, and evaluate on an ongoing basis. The distribution of medication to a community is a great chance to be able to practice applying all of those competencies to staffing and implementing medication distribution. And that's called a point of distribution. Now, this slide is from a colleague who was with a region in Connecticut. Connecticut broke its planning for administration of smallpox vaccine and then bioterrorism response into communities of 100,000. So three communities in Connecticut got together. They were Region 6. And Region 6 took about a year and was not having a good experience in developing their volunteer cadre of who would implement this distribution of medication. So one of them had the bright idea that they needed a nurse heading their public health planning effort up. And so this is the ad that I saw in the paper, looking for a response coordinator. And I remember back to Kay Bender saying, is this what she was talking about? So indeed, I joined Region 6, and public health was really trying to implement a lot of funding and a lot of planning all at once. And there weren't a lot of people out there that visioned what needed to happen. And as a former emergency medical technician and a former emergency room nurse, yet with a focus on public health, with my master's in public health, it seemed intuitive to me. In the first year of my company, I had over 10 people on my payroll list because there was so much work to be done. One of the things we needed to do is to put together what that distribution system for distributing medicine would look like. So we teamed up with the experts in managing traffic. So we often had fire and police doing that. And we set up a clinic. But you know, those of us that are in nursing have this vision that a clinic is like a hospital clinic. And it's much more like a warehouse. But it took me a couple of years to recognize that it wasn't my vision of a clinic. But I believe that it is essential for nursing to be a part of clinics, although the national model says it doesn't have to be, because of the trust that our communities have in us. They will look for those their nurse neighbors at the distribution center. So we have the clinic entrance, and if someone has no symptoms, they go to a registration table, develop their forms, see some videos, and make their all the themselves to the table where medicine is distributed, and then they're out the door. But we also have people who have symptoms who will be examined by a physician or nurse practitioner or PA, may need to go to the hospital, may be able to make their way back to the exit interview and out the door. But this slide was developed by a guru in public health. And I do believe it's the best example. He's an EMT who has his master's in public health as an EMT. The best on what different people can bring to the table. I don't think I could have designed this slide. But it was great to be a part of the discussions that led up to that slide, because they couldn't have done that without me. So, two-way street. In order to do that slide, there's something called just-in-time training, where the roles and responsibilities of all the responders need to be clarified. And there's no one like us nurses to say there's no way they're going into a situation where they don't know their roles and responsibilities. We can get a little headstrong about that. Flu clinics are a fun way to get a lot of medication out to a lot of people and practice that point of distribution model. And what's especially rewarding about that is not only do you get to see how all the many players are able to express their role and get the questions, and I didn't know this and I didn't know that, or we should do this better the next time, people are able to get their flu vaccine. So it's great, two-way street. When you participate in defining a plan, try your best to not let people change the plan midstream. Because if you tweak one thing, it may have an impact down the road. So work the plan is sort of the motto. When we think about nurses going from novice to expert, there's a lot of novices that are fearful about going into an extreme situation. Shannon Tekma was a nurse who worked at the Children's Health Fund, an organization that I'm a part of at this time. She was in Mississippi, in Biloxi, when Ike hit. And her mobile unit was being deployed to Houston. She had never done this kind of thing before, and yet found her bravery and really realized what the role of a nurse in an urgent situation can be. Hurricane Katrina destroyed 90,000 miles of the Gulf Coast. Over 500,000 children were relocated to backup schools. 1,045 lives were lost. And on any given day, as the response built up in Katrina, 8,000 rescuers were around at any given time. 130,000 students were placed in various schools around the country. I mean, you talk about disrupting so many lives. Loss, the overriding theme that we continue to see in New Orleans and the other communities affected by Katrina, Rita. Doris will be speaking with us about transportation. Maybe we can bring this slide back up, Doris. About a month after Katrina hit, FEMA had a village in New Orleans so that those of us who were part of response, had a home base for food and supplies, because the infrastructure in New Orleans was completely devastated. And no less so in Galveston with Hurricane Ike. I was in the process of writing an article called Nurses Without Walls right at the beginning of September. And that's when Gustav hit. And Ike was out in the Caribbean at the time Gustav hit that Labor Day weekend. Gustav took the Gulf Coast that had been ravaged by Katrina, Rita and just pummeled them once again. Not to the same extreme, but they took in communities that already had a very fragile infrastructure. So you can see what the worries were. This was post Hurricane Ike. Ike just went right through this building, just went right through it and tore so many of the walls off. I had an opportunity as I was working with the different regions in Connecticut when Katrina Rita hit. I had an opportunity to go into New Orleans as a volunteer with an organization called Operation Assist. Operation Assist was a collaborative effort with the Children's Health Fund and Columbia University's Mailman School of Public Health's National Center for Disaster Preparedness. Those two organizations teamed up to bring Operation Assist to the Gulf Coast. They brought urgently needed medical care via a mobile unit as a solution kind of tool and teams to provide post-disaster primary care. And they did some advanced public health testing more in the strike team arena. As a PNP, I went in to see children, and yet by the time I got in, and I was with the first plane load of people post Katrina Rita coming in, so it was a pretty military-enhanced organization at that time, the children had been evacuated, which was a great thing. I saw 14 kids in the couple of weeks that I was there. This family, those children were well. However, they needed home. They needed a home. They had nowhere to live. This was Dr. Robert Bristow. He was the ER doc that I went in with. And he had just come from the tsunami in India. So I call him a bit of a disaster junkie. But it was wonderful for me, coming from the preparedness table, to watch someone in action. So how to move from one arena. And I was talking to nurses for over a year about what they brought to the planning table. What I learned from this is what nurses bring to the rescue. Now, this was Children's Health Fund Operation Assist's mobile unit in Algiers prior to moving it over to New Orleans, because we wanted to be where the people were. And the beauty of this mobile unit is that you can take it wherever you need to go. When I was with Hurricane Ike in Houston, we were positioned at a shelter for 1,200 people, and Anthony was the driver of the mobile unit in Houston. We went into that shelter, and everybody knew Anthony, our driver. So they're not just drivers, they're ambassadors and mayors sometimes also. In New Orleans, we triaged and accessed care from so many different venues. We partnered, Operation Assist partnered with Tulane University in Louisiana, Department of Public Health, and Metropolitan Home Care to provide clinical care, mental health services and support, a bottle of water here and there, a sandwich. I'm telling you, we all lost 10 pounds because we gave our lunches away to anybody that we could. In Houston, we went in and very closely aligned ourselves with Red Cross. Those are three Red Cross nurses who were with the leadership of the response to Hurricane Ike. We're there because we communicate, we're competent, and we collaborate. California Nurses Association, any California nurses here? Oh, be proud, in case you're not already. 500 nurses from California Nurses Association were a part of the rescue with Katrina Rita. This nurse went up to Baton Rouge, where she helped take care of babies in the nursery. You know, because let us not forget that so many of the nurses and providers in disasters have families and can be a part of the disaster themselves. This is from the hospital in Galveston. It's the volunteers who got quick licensing through the state health department who were able to sort of man the fort, clean the place up, take care of some patients, until the Galveston nurses came back. And that was with the University of Texas medical branch down there in Galveston. Beautiful hospital. This is Mary Green, a colleague of mine from New Orleans, a maternal child nurse, getting her doctorate in nursing. She's doing this doctorate in nursing since she was both a victim and a rescuer in New Orleans. And I gotta say, she's my hero. She, one minute, she and her husband thought they had gotten by Katrina. And then they heard water coming into their downstairs. Before she knew it, her and her husband were up to their neck in water. She worked with her neighbors to rescue her neighbors. She tied dead bodies to telephone poles so that they couldn't go out to the lake. And then she was there to work with me on the medical mobile unit as a part of the partnership between Metropolitan Home, LSU, Tulane, and Operation Assist. and any community member that had time to participate. Oh, veterinary care. Ike, they identified at least 25,000 cows and animals swept away. They have Operation No Fences down there to find all of those animals. They have saltwater destruction of fields. We're good at partnering with so many players, and the faith-based, the mental health stress that communities go through in an extreme situation, it's great to have lots of new partners. It takes a team, and you make quick friends very quickly. This was an example. You see Mary Green right there, front and center. We had a morning report every day. Our mobile unit was parked in with the narcotics division of the police. So I would get the morning report from the police and in turn give it to the staff that were there for just-in-time training. So every day it changed. Every day we had a focus on giving us diagnoses from an epidemiological perspective we could use to track diseases and potential problems. That was a Tulane doc there, front and center, providing great leadership. Before you knew it, we looked like a regular hospital outside. We were truly nurses without walls, dealing with the feelings of depression, and Children's Health Fund continues, along with Louisiana, to place support services in the schools and the communities because the loss doesn't go away. Louis Rossi was a nurse that I met quickly on from California. He was a Marine turned pediatric intensive care unit nurse. And I always liked walking around with Louis because I felt quite secure that if I ran into a very sick kid, he could help me in that arena. And if I ran into an unsafe situation, he was clearly a Marine in that situation. Walking around the streets, I had my Marine at my side. Those are two California nurses. I don't know if you recognize them or not. So are they. Before you knew it, you said goodbye to those friendships, those professional friendships that you'd made. This is Frank from Children's Health Fund, who was my bodyguard and strike assessor par excellence in Houston and Galveston. Before I turn this over and reintroduce Doris Brown, I would like to share with you a video that I had an opportunity, as did Doris, to be a content expert in developing with Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson has a campaign to recruit nurses, and they wanted to focus on the role of nurse as a hero. But as I see my colleague and boss in the back row, Johnson & Johnson really wanted to capture the collaborative effort of nurses with all professionals to be able to achieve a sound community after a disaster has occurred. It's all about collaboration and taking down the barriers to communication and finding partners, pediatrician, EMS, police, that state, local, and national, that can help us accomplish our objectives.
Oh my God. Can you just imagine something, never having experienced anything like that before? It was something like out of a horror story.
Storm hits Monday morning. We go through the worst of it, where what we thought was the worst of it, and that was getting our patients into the hall because the winds were kind of beating up.
Water was coming in all along the run. That was going great. Something. And people were scared as hell.
We were on generator power, which meant minimal lighting, no air conditioning.
After the ventilator's batteries ran out, we had all of our nursing staff, housekeepers, vice presidents, any hands on deck, so to speak, maintaining these people's breathing by bagging them with an amber bag.
I basically kind of felt we might not make it out of here anyway. I'm going to do the very best I can to save who I can.
Went to the ICU in the darkened unit and started moving everybody to this heliport that we're standing on. We had about 250 to 275 patients that were in our hospital. We lined them up and pushed them under the deck to where they had shades at night. It was cooler out from underneath, so we moved them out.
You could breathe. You could see the patient in the hospital. It was dark and it was hot.
It felt like 200 degrees, but it was probably only about 106.
We had this like little MASH hospital unit going on in the parking garage.
The first problems we started seeing was with our NICU babies, preemies, little bitty babies who temperature regulation is a big thing. They were just hot. You were looking at them in these isolates, and they're panting because they're so hot. Their body temperatures are going up. Every nurse took a baby, and we wrapped them. We started the trek up to the heliport. One of the most wonderful sights I saw was right over here from the horizon. We started seeing helicopters fly in. Two nurses were with them, and we literally walked up, handed it to them, and that's how they took them out.
This is my husband, Bruce. Bruce was crushed under a man lift, and so he has brain damage. This is the sixth floor. The elevators are not working. The heliport is across the street on the third floor. There's no elevator taking him down. He has to go down in this chair because he does not walk. The nursing staff took my husband in this big heavy chair. The weight of going down, 22 stairs per level to get him to the heliport and doing it over and over again for each of the patients.
You become very strong when you have to carry a patient down the hill.
And then once we're out on the deck waiting for the helicopters, they continue to take wet rags and wipe his face as he was perspiring.
And when they were flying off, we were all jumping up and down, high fiving, blowing kisses. It was just great.
The head nurse of the unit did not know where her parents were. All she knew was that they lived in the section that she had just heard on TV had breached. And she was horrified, yet she's in here. I'm getting goosebumps. Remember, taking care of my husband. Angels, they are all his little guardian angels.
You're the one born to care. Since you've always been right there. Haven't you felt it from the start? With your hand, with your palm, touching life.
We never had flooding in this area, so I was totally not prepared for what we had to deal with. One minute there was no water, and the next minute it was, 4 foot in the hospital. The water outside got up to about 7 foot. I looked out there, and it looked like an aquarium because the water was so deep on the outside, and you could see fish swimming by the windows. After the eye went over and it got real calm, somebody spotted the first patient wading toward us, covered in mud, in her nightgown, no shoes, had been swimming in the storm trying to get to help. Then that's when they said, patients are coming and we need to get down there and get ready.
There were hundreds of them. We just thought, any minute now, somebody's going to come help us.
We heard a helicopter. And so we all looked out the second floor and it was a Coast Guard helicopter, and we thought, oh, how wonderful, somebody's coming to make sure we're okay, they're coming to check on us. They did come and they did land, but it was to bring us patients that they had rescued.
I had to do an anesthesia and surgery in here in the dark, my flashlight.
It made me really appreciate the basics of nursing.
You had to take care of the emotional part. You're suturing someone, looking at you, telling you that they just watched their spouse drown.
I've had one of them sit and talk to me. I lost my son.
The people of this community had just been through the worst thing that they could have ever gone through. A lot of them watched their family members die, their homes gone, and they turned the corner needing care, and we were here.
They stuck to their post. They did what they could. There was doctors and nurses out here on the apron, suturing people with flashlights. I tell you, I'm proud of what they did here. I mean, they did an excellent job.
I met quite a few angels when I was in ICU. I mean, they were angels.
hurricane was approaching us.
Well, the muscle blew off to the roof. Well, water started coming down through the panels, ceiling panels falling.
Electricity was gone.
That was the beginning of a very difficult 4 or 5 days.
Patients were swimming to the hospital. Patients were coming in from nursing homes in military vehicles.
We had a couple of dialysis patients that were with us, and that was very frightening. Someone who doesn't get their dialysis, they eventually die.
I had one patient who was critical. He needed to be dialyzed, and he was very sick. I told him everything that I could tell him. I said, you know, we lost power. We're trying our best. You know, I'll be here. I'm watching you. If there's anything you need that I can do for you, I'll do it. He just nodded his head. He's like, yes, I understand. When I found out he had died, I cried and cried and cried. Just wish I could have done more with him.
By midday Wednesday, when we had heard news reports that we had already been evacuated, that's when it became crystal clear to all of us that if we were going to get out, we were going to have to get ourselves out. We didn't know how we were going to get out. There was water everywhere, and our patients were too sick to wade them out or walk them out. Figured the only way to get out is by helicopter. In spite of standing on top of the rooftop for a couple of days, waving banners, holding up signs, there were no helicopters coming to the hospital. We carried them down from the intensive care unit, in some cases down 12 floors, all the way down to ground level.
We had some patients that went out on spine boards on a boat.
I heard a lot of screaming and yelling that somebody is shooting, get back inside. And we dragged the patients back inside. People were outside with their guns drawn. The military were outside, our hospital police. And it was scary.
So we loaded them on these boats and then floated them over to this parking garage, where we then carried them up to the rooftop, where helicopters would land and carry them off. You just got a free ticket off the rock. To a person, every one of those nurses got back in that helicopter and flew right back down. They weren't going to leave until the job was done.
Those patients knew if we didn't move quickly that they were going to die.
Well, one of our patients was a 23-year-old.
Hunter was one of the worst patients as far as illnesses in our ICU.
He collapsed lung on one side and was just barely holding on.
He has an illness that affects his kidneys and lungs and causes him to bleed.
So we loaded Hunter up as one of the first four to go out to the parking garage. About halfway over there, Hunter started to become less responsive, and you could feel his pulse became weaker. All we could figure was that he had collapsed his left lung, that he had a pneumothorax on the left side.
One of my nurses was there standing right next to him. It was a pretty dramatic scene. I mean, there wasn't much lighting.
On the back of that truck, using flashlights, we did a chest tube into his left pneumothorax. Didn't bring any sedation, any analgesia, or any anesthetic.
And I gave Hunter all the medicine that I had, and it still took four of the staff members to hold him down while that chest tube was being inserted.
Blood pressure started to come up. Started to become more responsive.
It was quick thinking, and I think that they saved this guy's life. I'm very proud of him. Very proud of him.
It was like third world medicine. It was very scary.
Good news is Hunter doesn't remember any of it.
And we use my own words for it. They all become like family. She's wonderful. And I love her.
You know, I always praise the staff at charity that got Hunter through the storm and saved his life.
They hadn't had any sleep, they hadn't bathed, they stood by the bedside for days.
I want to tell the world that the people that were in that hospital for 6 days did an incredible job. Incredible job. They were wonderful, and they took real good care of patients.
Nurses came from all over the United States. They came and they volunteered. All races, creeds, colors.
Each person that you saw on the street represented a need. Every turn, there was an opportunity for nursing to make a difference.
It's so worthwhile just to help, to reach out and be able to help one person.
Made me realize why I'm proud to be a nurse, and then I picked the right profession. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
The feeling of the success when somebody reaches their goals and becomes independent again after being in a coma is worth every ounce of being a nurse. This is what I was meant to do, to be a nurse.
For anybody out there who likes excitement,
Anybody out there who cares about other people? Anybody out there who likes the adrenaline rush that you get from doing something good? Nursing is what you should do.
Being a new nurse, I guess it could have swayed me in both directions. I could have been like, oh, never again. And like, after being evacuated, I want to go into something else. I want to step foot in nursing again. But actually, it's like made me stronger. I know this is what I want to do, and I know I want to go, you know, further in the field and get my master's, learn all that I can, and help more people, do more.
Nurses are no longer handmaids for the doctors. Nurses take charge. It never gets boring.
You can't find it. I'm better to go compete.
So it was a great opportunity to celebrate what Nurses Without Walls bring to the public health emergency response table. One of the things that we've learned from Katrina, Rita, Gustav, and Ike is that needs that are not met prior to a disaster are only going to be worse after that disaster occurs. There were two new moms that I met at the shelter in Houston who delivered their babies in shelters. Those babies were 2 weeks old when I met them. Those moms were homeless before Ike ever hit. So many of the problems that we see in the Gulf Coast were problems before Katrina, Rita, and Gustav ever occurred. So this is a great opportunity for nurses to think about joining the public health table and advocating that every child has the right to a good school, a nurturing home, medical care. And if not, we see during a disaster the devastation that can occur, worse than they would ever have imagined before that disaster did take place.